as a fear of divine punishment. So we have one state of doing it, being in that state of contrite heart for a love of God, and that's pretty perfect. But when we fear divine punishment, that just takes it down just a point or two. It's still fine, so it's good, but there's better. And for a love of God, if you really feel that love of God, that's where you're really convicted to bring forth your transgressions and clear them up, rather than having to go back years and years and years when you suddenly think about it. Christianity's definition is the detestation of past sins and resolve to make amends, either from the love of God, perfect contrition, or from the hope of the kingdom. So, if we want to get to the kingdom, then that's slightly more imperfect, but it's still good. I mean, that's where we want to be, and that's what we want to set ourselves up with. But, so let's look at it in simpler terms. Are we really sorry for transgressing God's law because of what His law means to us? Are we contrite and sorry and regretful for those transgressions we find ourselves in from time to time? Because we respect and love God and understand He is not just inventing rules to spoil our fun. Or are we just being good people by adhering to a law because we consider ourselves law-abiding? That's what good people do. I mean, if you get you're driving, you get a ticket. Are you sorry when the policeman gives you the ticket because it's going to cost you money? Or are you really sorry for transgressing a law that society has made to protect other people? There's a little difference there. So basically, that's what we're thinking of. It is understandable to do that, certainly, because I think it's pretty normal for flesh and blood to humankind to want to be in good standing with our God. But remember, God reads our hearts, and He stresses love of Him first and the love of our neighbor. And He is love, period. So if we're transgressing that, we're showing basically that we don't love God. Now, we're not trying to show Him that, but it does show Him that, and we have to bring that together and press that home in our minds, that the love of God is what drives you, not the fear of not going to the kingdom or the fear of retribution. God to reconcile is certainly a way to do it. A better way to reconcile is on your conscience. And fortunately, we do have a conscience. Certainly, most of them in the church, I'm sure, have a conscience. And most people, flesh and blood living out there, there's some that don't. I don't think they were born without a conscience. I think that comes from just living in life, and what befalls us sometimes is some people grow up with a very difficult situation and they get hardened hearts and whatnot. We can speak of contrite, on the other hand, as an adjective, such as in contrite heart, contrite spirit, is to be filled with a sense of guilt and a desire for atonement, penitent, and a contrite sinner. What is contrition then? First, let's see what it is not. I was thinking when I was writing this, Tiger Woods is somebody who everybody would recognize as a ultimate sportsman. He was, I think, probably given a huge gift by God in that he was able to put a small ball in a hole about three times the size from 30, 40 feet. He got very famous, and he got a lot of contracts with a lot of sponsors that were interested in linking with man of such stature. They love celebrity ingrainment in people's mind. What happened with Tiger? Well, he strayed a bit from his marriage. Married to a very beautiful woman, and he had a 7-year-old child at the time. She had just brought the new child into the world 4 months ago, before he strayed off, and he was in, I guess, having a shower, and she found his cell phone. It beeped or something, so she looked at it, and it was a female friend of his. And when he got out of the shower and dressed, she faced him with it, and he stuttered around a bit, and then she took an iron and chased him out of the house. And then she broke the windows of his car as he was driving out of the driveway at about 30 miles an hour, and he hit a fire hydrant. So that was the end of the golfing part, but then there was many other things. But Tiger, it became a bit of a serious thing because he was making about $110 million a year on sponsorship. Now, it wasn't all of his income. Obviously, he had lots of money, but the sponsors came after him and, you know, said he had to make an apology. So this apology was, you know, very good. He apologized to his wife. He apologized to all the fans out in the world. And he seemed sorry. But, you know, when you introduce $110 million into the formula of being sorry, that's way, way down the list on perfect contrition. So I would hope he felt for that. But, you know, was he really sorry? That's what we do is with human flesh and blood. We have the knowledge of good and evil. We just have a problem choosing when evil is so tempting. And Tiger obviously had opportunity, all kinds of opportunity. We've known lots of people in the church that's happened to and whatnot. But you know, whether he's a Buddhist or an Oprahite or whatever, he made the apology and that was it. But I would call it less than, as an example, less than absolutely feeling it in your bones and your blood. Let's look at King David. Excuse me, I forgot something. Let's turn to Psalms 34:18. Psalms 34:18. It is, the Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. So it's an indication by God in writing in our book that it is important for him. Let's as well look at another Psalm of David, Psalm 51, where Nathan the prophet had approached King David regarding David's incident with Bathsheba. And not to forget Uriah, her husband. So let's read this together from verse 1. I think I'm going to go through to verse 6. I'll look and see. Psalm 51. Actually, let's go to 17 first, 51:17. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, thou wilt not despise. So, David was pretty upset with himself. Let's go back to 51:1. When it was pointed out that it wasn't just between him and Bathsheba, but David dispatched Uriah, and when he started to think about this, I guess when it was pointed out that he got very low, and well he should. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, he pleads. According unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. It reads in 2, wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. Well, it's easy to read that, but David was in a huge state at this point. He acknowledges in 3, I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. And we don't need to go into the full thing. Everybody's pretty familiar with what happened to him after that. He was very, very low. But this was kind of a this was a way more distraught than we normally have if we've strayed to some extent. I'm not saying we strayed like David did, but there are lesser sins. And God doesn't consider them lesser sins. They're all the same. I wish there was sometimes, because I'd just like to sin a little the odd time and, you know, not have the big mark against me. But if it's salvation we're aiming at for David, Psalm 51 is a good guide, actually, if you're in turmoil. Read Psalm 51, the whole thing. It's lots of things in there that sort of remind you, bring you up to speed on prayers, on asking for thanks for forgiveness. Probably you, as I, have discovered you must be convicted and feel it in your bones, in your blood, as David says in 57:14, if you still got that up. Actually, then in 13 he says, then I will teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. Deliver me from the blood guiltiness, O God, thou God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing loudly of thy righteousness. It's almost like he's making a little bit of a bargain here. He's going to try and teach the transgressors that were many in those days, which in the history of all the Jewish best people and whatnot, they were full of transgressions, and Jeremiah tried all the prophets tried, but they seem to ignore them. And now David's going to actually bring them together. So he was really desperate at this point. Deathbed confessions. It's another thing that people that aren't even in the church quite often, or maybe they are, they've done some things that they don't, you know, particularly want to carry with them if they're going to die. And sometimes occur when a person has come up short to make things right with God and the world, or approaching the urgencies that are required of God's attention. But again, it's imperfect contrition. So we're starting to get a feel for what perfect contrition is, and a contrite heart, and what a last-ditch attempt to make things right is not totally honest, shall we say. David's contrite heart is so honest, and he is so distraught at what he did in passion. Not his cool head that he had, but put simply, cannot come to terms with it, basically. Everything he stood for was God's heart, and there's no sacrifice that he can make to atone. Burning a beast will not work for him or for God, and he is painfully aware of it. So, and I think deals probably are okay with God, but it's best. I mean, people make them all the time. If you say, my husband, I'll study every day or something like that. My child, I mean, there's many things that happen to us. They're just terrible, and we rely on God to fix what is happening. And we're liable to say anything at that time. It's the following through when we actually get what we ask for them. That's the tougher part, but it's very important. You can't, God, knowing your heart, you can't promise things that you have absolutely no ability to do, or perhaps no intention to do, which would be very, very bad. The continuous contrition. Isaiah, if we go to Isaiah 57, Isaiah 57, 15. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth in eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him, and also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrary ones. Now we've got another factor working its way into this. Is you have to be humble to be contrite. So it's gotten a little more complex. You just can't suddenly become contrite. You have to be humble, of a humble heart, to do that. You can't be right all the time. If you're right all the time, you kind of lose the whole concept of being contrite, because why would you be contrite if you know everything? And people, there's a lot of people that do that. Certainly not any of us, but it's impossible. Our egos will defeat us in our relationship with God, and those very egos will defeat us in our relationships with God and our earthbound family, our close friends, our loved ones. We all want to put our best foot forward, so to say, but humility is our best friend in dealing with human relationships, basically, because people see a softness and a spirit in those that that are not perfect. It's our imperfections that are built into us that actually make us more loving. It's hard to love a perfect person on earth. You can love your God that's perfect, because there's a reason for that. But we come up very short of perfect. And when people know that's a charade, if you're acting perfect, because it's not a natural thing. God's building a family, and his first and main priority, he is not fixated on you or me. And that's shocking to some people that are not aware of that. He desperately wants us there, but if we don't want to, or we don't take it serious enough to be contrite, I mean really contrite, he won't be. We won't be. There, that is. So, let's go to Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66. We'll look at verse 1 and 2, particularly 2, where God speaks of the heaven as being his throne. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Very familiar one to us. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord, but to this man I will look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. So this is a very important concept to our God, is a contrite spirit. It's easier to understand the concepts of contrition and humility if you begin to understand that anything that you have accomplished in this world is basically nothing compared to what God does and what has done and what he is doing and why he is doing it. We have PhDs that have studied long and hard. They get to a point where they think they know pretty much everything. If they haven't got God's guidance, they don't understand that they don't have all the answers. They're just kind of this much compared to this much. They will fall out of favor, and it's kind of ridiculous to listen to them sometimes that they don't have contrite hearts, they don't have any humility at all. Once you get to a PhD level, there's very few people can question you on anything. Contrition is not as easy to get a sense of. I'm not trying to scare anyone. Well, maybe I am, but for good reason. There's a lot of people here that I would really like to see in the kingdom, so I thought we should look at this. I had an experience myself when I was quite young, 8 or 9 years old, and I kind of discovered a conscience. We lived across from the University of Saskatchewan, and it was a great big soccer depression, big field, and it wasn't used a lot, and used to flood in the winter with the snow and whatnot. But in the summer, there was sort of little gophers, and there was nesting places for birds, hawks particularly, because they were close to the gophers. And I found this little hawk, and I thought, golly, there's no mother around or anything. I don't know what's going to happen to this, but it'd be neat to, you know, watch it and play with it, stuff like that. So I took it home, and I put it in a little cage. And Mom said, you know, probably the mummy is going to be looking for that baby pretty soon. And I said, oh, probably not. So, because I wanted that, to observe the hawk. And so he peeked away and whatnot, and he was peeping in the first place when I picked him up out of the field. But anyway, I'm going to bed that night. I started to think about this business of the hawk, mummy missing the baby, and the baby missing the mummy, and I related to myself and mummies, and it got pretty serious on my head. So I got up at 2:30 in the morning, and I took that little hawk back and put him in the field. Now, I don't know whether the mummy found that baby or not, but it seemed to work on my conscience, and I was sorry enough that it worked on me, and I took it back. So the concept of conscience, and the concept of doing what is right to some extent, played on me. So I recognized that, and it's a good thing to have things like that happen. Not so good for the little hog, but certainly it was good for me. I learned a conscience. To be contrite, you have to have an awareness of doing wrong before God. To be aware, you have to understand how God wants us to behave. To understand, you have to read and study God's words, instructions, and how he wants our behavior to be. And then and only then can we begin to be responsible and of use to God. He has to use us. He wants to use every one of us. But he can't develop another Satan. He's not going to do that. So if we are not of the right heart, then he's not going to give us a place where we would really like to have a place. I reckon that God does not expect we're going to get it right the first time, but if we get it wrong through error and humbly contrite enough, he still has hope for us that we can correct those errors, hopefully not to be repeated. In other words, an increase in understanding has occurred, as we were speaking of a minute ago, and then we become closer and learn to be more pliable in our character development, which, of course, we have reviewed in the last day, what happens in our character. Character is like the climate. It's a set thing. Eventually, it becomes a set thing. Ben Orchard covered that. Character development through education, self-correction, through understanding, contrition from consciousness of God's requirements and recognition of error, if and when it occurs, and believe me, it will. We all know that. Just to conclude, be aware. God wants the heart. He must have all of us be afflicted by our conscience, be contrite of heart. But whatever happens and however we are now, God wants all of us. So help him get you. He has done so much, and you have so little to do to be with him forever and ever.